Okay, good morning, everyone. We're going to pick up where we left off. We are on Kitten Daf Yud Amud Beis towards the bottom. We are going to cover Bezus Hashem Daf Yud Aleph today. We're going to pick up from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines up at the two dots for Bishim on the court of the Mishnah there. You will recall that the last Mishnah that we discussed was that we read was discussing Shtaros Shel Arkaos, that these Shtaros, these documents that are drafted and issued by non-Jewish courts. The Mishnah said that that those documents will be kosher by Sha'ar Shtaros, by let's say monetary documents, but not by Gitei Nashim Shechurei Avadim, not by Shtaros that have the higher status of a Get Isha or a Shechuror Eved. And the Gemara offered two reasons why. The Gemara said either it's only going to work by Shtar Raya and not by Shtar Kinyan. We spoke briefly about some of the very fundamental differences between Shtar Kinyan and Shtar Raya. Alternately, the Gemara suggested that they work because of Dina de Malchus Adina. So just two ha'aros on that before we go further. One, it's just an interesting expansion of the scope of Dina de Malchus Adina. The classic application of Dina de Malchus Adina is paying taxes. We know the Ran and Darim and that whole discussion about taxes then, taxes now, how they're the same, how they might be different, etc. But where does Dina de Malchus Adina apply beyond that? That's a major discussion among the Rishonim v'Achronim. There's a machlokas among the Achronim that Rav Shechter is fond of quoting between the Shach, among the early Achronim, and the Chazon Ish, much later Achronim. Shach is a principle that Dina de Malchus Adina applies in any circumstance that Choshen Mishpat doesn't address. In any circumstance that's not addressed by the Halacha, we follow the Dina de Machusa, the law of the land. Chazon Ish was horrified by this shita of the Shah. Why? What does that mean? That something falls outside of the purview of Choshen Mishpat, right? Choshen Mishpat is a set of principles. A set of principles can be applied to any situation. So it's a little bit difficult to understand what exactly the Shah meant. That's why the Chazon Ish took issue with it. My hunch, my theory, and again, this is I have no fundamental sources to prove this or support for it, but my hunch is that perhaps the Shach was talking about certain economic realities that present as metzias, that present as realia rather than halachic issues. Take certain all sorts of complex financial institutions that we have nowadays, right? Just even ownership of stocks, right? And all sorts of bonds, all sorts of what they call financial products nowadays, right? So how does the halacha address those? So you could try to address them through the principles of starting with Hamotzi Mechaver Olavaraya and just work from there. Alternately, you could say that these are a form of contemporary economic mitzvahs, right, that are recognized by the government and things like that. And therefore, when they fall outside of the natural purview of Choshen Mishpat, perhaps they are subject to the Malchus Adina. And perhaps it's those kinds of things Shach was referring to when he said that something outside of Choshen Mishpat is governed by Dina de Malchus. But in any event, again, the Chazon Ish felt that there was no such category. And certainly, again, it's certainly true in a technical sense. Chazon Ish certainly, I mean, it's evident that obviously if you take the principles of Choshen Mishpat, you can certainly expand them to any circumstance. That's just an interesting question about the scope of Dina de Malchus. And then the second piece, I already raised this last time, and I remind everybody again, and we will return to it over the course of the daf that we're about to see in a moment, the daf Yud Aleph, is the question of whether these Shtarei Arkaos have the power to be gova min hachasim mishubadim. That's, again, one of the critical, perhaps the most obvious, critical difference between milva alpeh and milva b'shtar. In halacha is that when you have a shtar, you can collect from the hachasim mishubadim, you can collect from property that is subsequently sold by your debtor, because there's a lien on all that property. Whereas by milva alpeh, you can't collect any property with a lien on it. You can't collect the chasim b'shabadim. You can only collect the chasim b'nechorim. There's machlokes rishonim as to whether or not that applies to these shtaros. What is that machlokes based on? So we're going to circle back to that because we're going to see a line of the Gemara that relates directly to that principle, and we'll circle back to that machlokes rishonim. But for now, let's begin to take a look at Daf Yud Aleph. So once again, we're going to start from 5 lines up from the bottom. Rabbi Shimon Omer Av Eluk Sheirin. So this line in the Mishnah that we're commenting on, as Rabbi Shimon said, that even a get can be kosher coming from Arkaos if it's coming from an established basin. It's only a problem if it's coming from a hedyot. We're going to see that there are two types of batidin. There's, again, what's called hedyot. This is, that's, you know, street corner, garage band basin. versus mumcha arkos. I'm sorry, versus mumcha or an established arkos, which have greater status. We're going to see four shitos in the Tanoim as to what the differences are between those two different types of courts. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, ask the Gemara, halabene krisos ninhu. How in the world can they be acceptable for a get if they're labene krisos, if they don't really have, they're not within the parsha, they're not within the halakha category of krisos? Now, what exactly does this mean? Rashi points out they don't really have gerushin. Tosos point out that if you look at it, it's a one-line Tosos, so we can read it together, that last Tosos over there, halabene krisos ninhu. Have a mati lemifra halabene edos ninhu. The Gemara also could have said they're not bene edos, they can't testify either, right? They're signing onto a document, they're signing onto a shtar. The Ramban kind of folds both of them together. They're not b'nei edos or b'nei krisos, but the Gemara's point is they should definitely not be kosher here. Now, just one side point that I will raise now is it really true that nachrim, that non-Jews, are lav b'nei krisos? Is there divorce for non-Jews from a halachic standpoint? Is there marriage for non-Jews from a halachic standpoint? So there certainly is marriage for non-Jews. It's not the same as marriage for Jews. This is more of a kiddushin sugya than a kitten sugya. But we have a principle of be'ulas ba'al. It's not the same as ki'ikach ish isha, right? But be'ulas ba'al does create a status of ishos for non-Jews. The way they effectuate or create ishos is different from the way Jews do. That is also, again, that's the Rambam, the first parak of Hilchos Ishos. So the marriage is a fair question to raise, Ari. And what about divorce? What about gerushin?
The real question is, like, is there mamzerus?
Is what a mamzerus?
No, is there mamzerus in the non-Jewish world? And then you would back into, there has to be kedusha.
Henry's asking whether there's mamzerus for non-Jews. Non-Jews don't really have yuchs in the same way. So I'm not sure that it would necessarily be contingent on mamzerus. In other words, we could raise a question as to whether or not they have marriage. A. B. Whether it's the same or different from our marriage. And see whether or not, if it certainly was different, whether they're, or even if it's the same, frankly, whether their marriage would entail mamzerus, given
what I'm saying, if you start at the end, it will bring light to the question.
But only in one direction. You are correct, only in one direction. If there is mamzerus, that would certainly indicate that they have marriage. If there is no mamzerus, that would not necessarily indicate that there is no marriage. That's my point. Because of the way Yochsan operates within Bnei Noach. So what about Gerushin? So there are two days in the Yerushalmi. One day in the Yerushalmi maintains that they cannot get divorced at all. The other day, the Yerushalmi maintains that it's easy for them to get divorced. She just leaves the house. There's no get. So either way, it's not our form of gerushin. Or the way Rav Lichtenstein used to put it, the Yerushalmi has machlokas, whether the Catholics or the Muslims were right. That was his. That was the way he used to put it. Yeah, can't say that nowadays. But that's the way Rav Lichtenstein used to put it. And that Yerushalmi is quite significant in understanding the difference between Ishos for Klal Yisrael versus Bnei Noach. Certainly, Be'ezus Hashem on Monday, when I give my Shir Hakdama on the Sechus Kitten, we're going to talk about the Yerushalmi significantly. That Yerushalmi is going to feature quite centrally. So when the Gemara here says, Labanei Krisos Ninhu, it could either mean they don't have divorce at all, or it can mean that they have divorce, but it's just very different from Jewish divorce. Or like Tosfos say, they're not Bnei Eidos, or there are a lot of different options for how that line should be read. But the Gemara is saying they definitely should not be kosher to serve as witnesses on a get. So Amar Rav Zera, so Rav Zera says, Yard Rav Shimon l'shitaso shal Rabbi Elazar. Here Rav Shimon is going within the shita of Rabbi Elazar. Should be familiar to us already. Came up already. You know, features prominently on Daf Gimel and Daf Dalet and Sechus Kitten. To Amar Eidei Mesira Karzi. What is that shita? That the Eidei Mesira are sufficient, even though it's non-Jews who are signed on the get. The assumption here is there will be Jews who witness the handover of the get. They will witness the Mesiras HaGet. And that will make sure that the get is kosher. Good. Now the Gemara raises a question here. Amar Rabbi Abba. Now there are going to be two ways to read this question and answer. We'll read the question and answer first, and then we'll explain it. We'll unpack it. Amar Rabbi Abba. But didn't Rabbi Abba say Moda Rabbi Elazar b'mezuyach mitofo shep pasul? Even Rabbi Elazar, who holds that you don't need witnesses on the document itself, you only need witnesses to see the transfer of the document. He himself admits that if there's a problem in the document, then that is an issue. In other words, if they just witnessed the document handed over and it's just a blank document without signatures, then he would say, okay. But if it's mezuya mitocho, if there are problems internally to the document, even Rabbi Elazar would admit that that's a problem. So if there are non-Jews signed onto it, that would presumably be a problem even for Rabbi Elazar. Gemara answers Alpha Bamaya. Skin on top of Yud Alpha Medalek. The Shemos Mukhakin. What are we dealing with? Overtly non-Jewish names. Now, why do overtly non-Jewish names help? So there are two approaches to this in the Rishonim. The first is Rashi. Rashi is the more intuitive approach, I think, or the simpler approach, I should say. Rashi says the whole problem of Mizuyak Mitocho is that when people see that this document is kosher, they're going to say, what are they going to say? They're going to say, oh, the witnesses who signed onto it must be kosher. They're not going to be lamdanim and say, oh, it's kosher because Rabbi Elazar Shita had Edim Siro when it was given over. They're just going to see the names on the shtar. They're going to say, oh, these people are good for testimony. And then their testimony is going to be accepted in court. That's a problem. We don't want non-Jewish testimony accepted in a Jewish court. So Rashi says, they declared it puzzle, even though technically speaking it should be kosher, because of a concern that people would accept them as kosher edim. Now, if the names are overtly non-Jewish names, then Rashi says nobody's going to make a mistake. Everybody's going to realize that clearly there must have been Jews who witnessed the transfer. Nobody's going to make a mistake of thinking that these guys are kosher, and therefore it's not a problem. The alternate approach to Zuyuk Bitocho, I'd say what's the more fundamental approach, if you will, is the Rashba. The Rashba maintains that once something is in the document of the Shtar, it becomes part of the Chefetz Shel Shtar. You can't ignore it anymore. Rabbi Elazar is saying you don't need Edim on the Shtar, that you don't need extra on the Shtar. That's fine. But anything you do put in the Shtar, that's now part of the Shtar. And if there's a problem with it, any problem with it, then that's going to render the Shtar internally puzzled, even if you have witnesses who see it transferred. That's much more of an internal Shtar consideration than Rashi's, which is obviously a more external consideration pertaining to ramifications that might happen if we accept the Shtar. So the Rashi was identifying a much more fundamental problem within the Shtar.
How do the non-Jewish names help?
Excellent question. So the Rashba says, when it comes to non-Jewish names, it's so mufka from the text of the Shtar that is not incorporated into the Chatzos HaShtar. Chiddush, right? Like I said, it's a little bit more of a difficult read of this line in the Gemara, but that's what the Rashba himself says, that once it's Shemos Mepakin, then it's not going to be incorporated into the Chatzos HaShtar, and therefore it is going to not pose a problem of Mizuyuk Mitocho. But that's it's an important principle of Mizuyuk Mitocho, and two radically different approaches to how to understand it. Okay, we continue with the first line on Daf Yud Aleph and Aleph, three words in. Gemara says, Hey, Dami, Shemos Mepakin, can you give me some examples of these overtly non-Jewish names? Amar Papa, the Papa says, Kegon, Hurmiz, Be'udina, Bar Shiftai, Bar Kidri, Ubati, Benakim Ona. All of these are examples of overtly non-Jewish names. Rashi says that they were Dayane of the Kochav. They were judges. They were prominent officials in those times. And all of those names are overtly non-Jewish. Interestingly, if you look at Tosfos don't have Hormiz, but they have rather Horman. I don't know if the name Herman would qualify. I'm not sure. But Tosfos discuss whether it's Hormiz or Horman. All of those are non-Jewish names. Okay. Then the Gemara asks,
oh
God. Aval, fourth line, Shemos She'em of Hakin, Mai. But if you have names that are not overtly non-Jewish, then what are you going to say? Mai, Lo, you're going to say that then the Shtar is Pasul. Ihachi, if so, I have a problem with our Mishnah. Adatani Seifa, when the Seifa came along and said, Lo Huskuru Elabizman Shnasu Behedyot, that again, if you recall the Seifa, this is what we started with when Rabbi Shimon said, that it's only going to be a problem when it's done in a non-professional court. If it's done in a professional court, it will be good. The Mishnah really should have introduced another really important distinction that we should know. Sixth line, Liflog Belisni Bidida. It should have said, even within a professional court, Hamedvar Mamurim B'Shemos Mubhakin. It should have said, it's only kosher when you have overtly non-Jewish names. Aval Shemos She'im Mubhakin, Lo. But when you have names that are not overtly Gayish, that are not overtly non-Jewish, then we will not accept those shtaros. So why, if once the Mishnah is introducing distinctions between different types of courts, give me an equally intuitive, if not more intuitive, or not intuitive, an equally important, if not more important distinction pertaining to the shtar itself, pertaining to who signed onto it. So the Gemara offers two answers. First, Hakinami Kamar. The Gemara says, you know what? You're actually right. And this is really what the Mishnah means to say. Bamedvar Mamurim, when is it going to be kosher? B'Shemos Mubhakin, when there are overtly non-Jewish names, and everybody will know that there were Edim Sira, there were Jewish witnesses to see the transfer. Aval B'Shemos She'im Mubhakin, but if you use not, if there the names there are not overtly non-Jewish, Na'aseh K'misha Na'asu K'hedyot U'Ptulin, then it is as if it was written in a non-professional court, and it is puzzle. So the first answer of the Gemara is Einach Inami, right? If it's those ambiguous names, if it's not overtly non-Jewish, then it's also going to be puzzle. And that's exactly what the Mishnah means to say. It's just like it's signed in a non-professional court. Bibaz Ema, alternately, the Gemara says, Seipa Asa'an L'Gitei Mamun. Really, the Seipa is not qualifying Shif or Eved. It's qualifying monetary Sharos. B'Hachika Amar, this is what it means to say. L'Huzkeru Gitei Mamun D'Psulim Ela Bizman Shana Asu B'Hedyot. The monetary Sharos are only possible when they are done in the court of a Hedyot. But when they are done in a mumcha, they are going to be kosher. That is the qualification of the seifa, is that it's really qualifying the first line rather than the second line. And like I said in a moment, we're going to really see four shitos in the Tanaim as to how exactly to interpret those lines, and we'll see that now. Okay, so that is the first piece of Gemara. You need those overtly non-Jewish names, and that is what sets them aside. The get is nonetheless kosher because of Edim Sir. Now the Gemara is going to quote a Braisa with additional opinions of the Tanaim on this issue. Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. Amar Rabbi Elazar bar Yosi. Rabbi Elazar bar Yosi had a slightly different version of the Machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and the Chacham. Kach Amar Rabbi Shimon and the Chacham in Betzida. This is what Rabbi Shimon said to the Chacham in Betzida. Lo nechlegu Rabbi Akiva v'Chachamim. Now we have Rabbi Akiva introduced. Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim only argued al kol hashtaros ha'ol in be'arkao shal ovdei kochavim. On most monetary shtaros that are signed or issued by non-Jewish courts, that even though they are signed by non-Jews, it is kosher. And even a get isha and a shechur eved is kosher. The machlokas only exists in an instance where it was issued by a non-professional court. Rabbi Akiva Machshir. The Chachamim poslim puts me gita nashim b'shachurei v'adam. Rabbi Akiva is machshir, and the Chachamim disqualify with the exception of gita nashim b'shachurei v'adam. Now, what exactly is all of this? So, if you look in the Mishnah itself, we had a machlokas in the Mishnah, and again, it's a little bit difficult because there are three factors at play. Of course, there are the different tanaim. There is the difference between shtari mamon and get, and there's a difference between hedyot and mumcha. So you really have to kind of spend a little time sorting everything out. I made a little chart for myself to sort everything out. But basically, it works as follows. Obviously, an expert basin is going to be better than a hedyot basin, right? And the assumption is generally that mamonos sharos are going to be better than a get. So there are different levels here. According to the Tana Kama, the way it's presented in the Mishnah, if it's a non-professional court, everything is out. Nothing is good. That's the lowest level, and everything is out. If you're in an expert court, We will accept a shtar for mamon, but not for a get. That's the opinion of the Tanakh. Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah goes one step further. Lekula. He says, you know what? In a non-professional court, we will be willing to accept monetary documents, but not a get. In a professional court, we'll be willing to accept even a get and shekhar abadit. And then Rabbi Akiva, as he's quoted right now, is willing to take the furthest step and saying, even on the lowest level, even in a non-professional court, we'll be willing to accept not just mamonos, but also a get and a shechur eved. So Rabbi Akiva, in short, is really taking the furthest approach, and he's really, really buying into Edim Sira the most. In other words, once you really buy into this notion of Edim Sira Karsi, then you really don't need the court at all. You don't need them there at all. So Rabbi Akiva is saying, then even in the hedyot case, I'm going to be willing to accept the get under the basis of the assumption that at the moment that the baal hands over the get to the isha, there are going to be Jewish witnesses who see it, and edim sir karsi, and therefore it is going to be good. So therefore, he's the most lenient in terms of allowing these documents from the archives. And then we have one final opinion. I said there are four opinions. So Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, Reb Shimon Gamliel says, Ab elu ksherin b'makom she'ein Yisrael chosmen. He has a new qualification. He says, the documents issued by the non-Jewish courts will be kosher in a situation where it's a locality where Jews are not allowed to sign on shtaros, where the local courts, the local non-Jewish courts, don't allow the Jews to sign. Rashi says, they don't allow them to sign. There were, all sorts of restrictions on Jews in many different ways throughout centuries and millennia of persecution. So Rashi says this is a locality where Jewish testimony is not accepted in court. They're not allowed to sign. So therefore, once again, that the witnesses who are signed are not Jewish, and you will know that you need a de mesira. Nobody's going to make the mistake of thinking that they are kosher witnesses. But in a place where Jews are allowed to sign on documents, then they're not going to be allowed to, because once again, it's this concern that people will then think that the people who are signed on, the names that are signed on to this document, are Eidos Kasherim. They will rely on them for Eidos, and really they can't be relied upon for Eidos because they are not Jewish.
So he holds, personally, holds between Rabbi Kiva and...
It's a totally different factor. I wouldn't say it's between, it's a total new calculus. It's a totally new consideration that the other Tanaim did not factor into their analysis, that it all depends on whether or not in that particular locality Jews are allowed to sign. The Gemara continues, Makom She'en Yisrael Chos Menami, even if Jews aren't allowed to sign, Ligzor Adu Makom She'en Yisrael Chos Men. Maybe let's still make a Xera, because people might mix it up with a place where Jews are allowed to sign. So there may still be sources of confusion. The Gemara says, Shema Bishma Machlif Asur Ba'asur Lo Machlif. Names people might confuse. You forget whether this person was Jewish or not Jewish. There are enough names that are ambiguous enough, particularly in a biblical society where lots of non-Jews have biblical names. It's easy to get confused. But when it comes to places, people aren't going to get confused. That's a clearer demarcation, and there people are not going to get confused. There's no reason for exera. Yeah.
What's the concern? We're going to see the non-Jewish names on the shtar,
correct?
And then they're going to come testify in court and
about anything. Accept them because
they're signed on a shtar that we might not even be here. But are we going to ask them? Are you
this get with these signatures was taken to the Bezdin of the Gadol Hadar, was taken to the Bezdin of I don't know Rav Nachman or whatever generation of Amorim you're dealing with, right? And he accepted it. So his Bezdin accepted these signatures, and we're going to say that these guys are puzzle Eidos. That's the mistake that people are going to make, and they're not going to realize that Rav Nachman's based and accepted it on the basis of the Eidim Mesira. The people, the witnesses who saw the Nesinas again, it's not the ones who were signed on to it. That's the Cheshesh. Okay? Tov.
Because of that rumor, you're going to involve it again.
Because of, like, of that Cheshesh, yeah. Because
we have it in Monday society.
Yeah. This Rav said this at this point in time. This God, okay, so
because of that Cheshesh. I mean, look, obviously, the Chacham went to great lengths to avoid igun situations. He only told himself to give almost to see that. But even still, we had standards on a get. Now it's not going to be the same. Correct. It's true.
But it's much easier for us to just say, we're going to check the witnesses when they come and make sure that they're Jewish, not just go by the fact that they signed their star.
We're going to check the witnesses.
And make sure that they're Jewish,
right, yeah,
rather than just rely on a previous star.
And how are you going to do that? It's not so simple. Yeah. Especially in a time where, again, you're going to ask them who their parents are. Were your parents Jewish? Yes. We're going to give them a test on Shas. It's not so simple. And this was a real concern. Now, Ari, I think part of what you're alluding to is that there are different levels of psulin and get. This is something that the Rambam highlights in his illustration. That there's a get that's ain't no get, that's not a get at all. And then there's something called a get puzzle, which is not as low as ain't no get. It's not a soul to the level of ain't no get that disqualifies it entirely. It's a lower level disqualification, and that would have nafkaminas. But yes, we do disqualify the get on the other
side. What happened to the whole inyan of lishma that we were so careful that the get's lishma? So
what happened to the Gayim? That is a very good question. What happened to the whole inyan of lishma?
We were worried that, but they didn't. Chutz la'aretz aren't.
Yeah, that's the whole lishma, that animates the entirety of the first parak. Or at least we're still in the first parak, but the entirety at the beginning of the first parak. That is a good question, Binyamin. I don't know the answer to that question. I wonder if. Remember, when the Gemara says lav b'nei krisus ninhu, Tosu said they're not b'nei eidos, Rashi said they're lav, they're not in the parasha of Gerushin. Does anyone just highlight the fact that it is not Lishma.
But they're not writing the cat, they're just signing their name.
I hear you. It could be a case where the Jew wrote it and they just issued it in the non-Jewish court. It's possible. I mean, it seems unlikely. Maybe that's the scenario.
It's a good question.
I confess I do not know the answer.
The non-Jewish court wrote the get? They're
clearly the ones issuing the get, right? The Lashon is Ha'olim be'arkao Ha'olim be'arkao shel of the kucha. That's the Lashon of the Mishnah. That is a good question. Again, I confess I don't know the answer. I have to look into it. I don't recall offhand if it's addressed. I'm looking just quickly in Rashi to see if perhaps he addressed it and I forgot. I'm not sure. It's a good question. It's a good question. Sorry, Ian. I owe you an answer on that. I have my homework now. Additional homework. Okay. But fine. That is the conclusion of the Gemara. Ravina Savar Lachshurei Bif Nufisa Daramai Amalei Raf Ramarkaosnan. So Ravina had a scenario where there was just this large gathering of the Aramai, of the Arameans, and he thought any get that was issued by that large gathering or shtar issued by that large gathering would be sufficient as well. Rafram says, no, it needs to be Arkaos, it needs to be an actual court. The Mishnah said Arkaos, it meant Arkaos. You can't just give me some general gathering. Okay, good. That's the discussion of the Gita Arkaos. Now we have a bit of a takeoff on that. In the next line, when Rava comments on another type of shtar, Amar Rava, we're now 7 lines up from the bottom. Hai shtara parsa'a, to masre niale ba'abe sa'ade Yisrael, magbinon me'be mi'b'nei chari. If you have a shtar, that's the shtar of the Persians. So it's written in Farsi. And as we'll see, there were other material differences between the shtar, the material that they would write their shtaros on, our shtaros. But if you had one of their shtaros, it would be good. It would be sufficient if it was issued. If the mesira was done in front of Jewish witnesses, you can at least collect from the chasam b'nei chorin. So v'halo yadi l'mikra. Now, what do you mean? The witnesses don't know how to read the shtar. They have no idea what document they're seeing transferred. How in the world can they testify on it? How in the world can it be relied upon? So the Gemara answers, b'diyadi. They grew up in Great Neck. They speak Farsi. And they could read the shtar. And they're able to tell, they can testify that it's actually saying what it's supposed to say. And don't you need ksav that you cannot be mezayev? So apparently in our klafs, if you look at Rashi, there was a whole process that they would go through. They would make the klaf in a particular way that you couldn't just fudge the writing or change it. And that was not present on the average Shtar Parsali. So the Gemara answers, B'da'afitzan, it's in a case where they went through our preparation process to make sure that indeed it cannot be Mizuya. Our Shtaros have a brief summation at the very end that kind of sums up the content of the Shtar at the very end. The average Shtar Parsali did not have that. So the Gemara answers, B'da'mahadr, it's in a case where they did it. Effectively, the Gemara is saying it's a Shtar Parsali, quote unquote. But it obviously adopts many Jewish practices. The Jewish witnesses need to know what it says, and the materials and the basic style of the document follow our shtaros. So then the Gemara says, if it really follows our rules of shtaros,
same thing could be said about the non-Jewish witnesses who are signing. How do they know how to read? If we had a real get written, how would they know how to read that?
If it was in Hebrew,
yeah.
So again, the assumption is clearly that either. They were able, I guess, again, that they were able to read it, that they were that they understood. If it's an Eretz Yisrael, they were able to read it and understand.
Or the Edim Sira.
Well, the Jews were Edim Sira. That's critical, right? The non-Jewish witnesses were just, oh, you're saying, or they were Edim Sira. Oh, Henry's point, right. You're 100% correct, Henry. Henry's point is correct. It doesn't matter, right? We're not relying on those witnesses, right? The whole point is that we're relying on the Edim Sira. Right, that's a better point. Correct. It doesn't matter whether they understood it or not. The Edim Mesira, who are Yisraelim, are the ones who need to see what's going on. So the Gemara says, "Ihachi, if it really adopts all these Jewish practices, mi mishabdi nami. So why are you only allowed to collect from Nechasim b'nei Chorin? If you recall at the outset, we said that is the hallmark of a milva al peh, not a milva b'shtar. You should collect from Nechasim b'shubadim as well. The Gemara answers, less le'kala, a very, very important principle in Shibudim. That one of the rules of Shibudim is the loan has to have a kol. It needs to be well known and meforsam. It needs to be on the public record that this loan was issued. Why? So that when people purchase property from this borrower in the future, they will know there are all these outstanding loans, and they'll know that the property that they're purchasing is indeed indebted, or there's a lien on the property towards somebody else. It needs to have a kol. It needs to be known. And why these Shari Parzai, which most people can't understand, that it's a funny looking document, it's not going to have the same kol. It's not going to have the same public impact or impact on the public impression that a traditional shtar does, and therefore there's no Gevi Aminu Chasu Mishu. Now, circling back to the question that we started with, do the Shtari Arkaos have Gevi Aminu Chasu Mishu Badin or not? So the Ritva actually says they do for the opposite reason given in the Gemara here. He says all of it is, it's not really about the shtar. It's all about the kol. And he says those documents have a kol, just like a Jewish document has a kol. And because it's all about the kol, and that's all it's all about people knowing, and that's the only factor, then they're going to have Gevi Aminu Chasu Mishu Badin. Now, what about the Rambam and the Ravid and Rishonim who disagree? They may hold that kol is a necessary factor in Shibud, but it may not be sufficient. It's not just about the kol and whether or not everybody knows about it. It may have to do with the special koach of an actual shtar, of a true shtar. And we see from our Gemara that it needs to also have a kol. If it doesn't have a kol, it's not going to work, but that may, it may be necessary and not sufficient, and there may be something internally important about the halachic status of the shtar that enables Gevi Aminu Chasu Mishu Badin. So that's potentially a very, very important focus. I have like 2 minutes. Do we want to rush to the Mishnah? What do we say? No?
Yeah, sure.
Yes? I'm getting conflicting reports here. Should we try?
Yeah.
We can move through it pretty quickly. Ba'amine Rish Lakish Meir V'Yochanan. Rish Lakish Ashur V'Yochanan. Eidim Chasuman Al Get U'Shmosan U'Shmos Ovdei Kochavim Mahu. If you have Jewish witnesses who are signed on a get, and their names are like non-Jewish names. Amar Lei, he said to him, says we had cases like Lucas and Luce, and we kashered the get. The Davka Lucas Veluce, and it's specifically with names like Lucas and Luce, the Lo Shlichi Yisrael to Maski Bishmasayu, because it's really not usual for a Yisrael to have those names. Aval Shmaza Achrini, the Shlichi Yisrael to Maski Bishmasayu. Low. But if there are names where that could easily get confused, then we would not have been mastered this get. Aisve, the Gemara asks Kasha based on a price. Did the Nabam Medina Sayam, but Edom Chasuman Alayam? If you have a get that comes from outside of Eretz Israel and witnesses are signed on it, Aval Pishish Mosein Kishmos of the Kochavim, Ksherin, even though the names are like the names of the Kochavim, it's Kasher, and it doesn't give any qualification, just as they're Kasher in a blanket way. Why? Because many of the Jews in Chutz La'aretz, this is already a prevalent phenomenon in the times of Chazal, and many members of Chazal themselves had non-Jewish sounding names, or Huna, Rav Chista. So most Jews in Chutz La'aretz have non-Jewish sounding names, and therefore it's going to be kosher. So the Gemara offers a very intuitive answer. Hasam Ketani Taimav, Nation Rov Yisrael Shem B'Chutz La'aretz, Shmos Ayan, Kishmos of the Kochavim. There's an obvious reason that's given. It's because they were from Chutz La'aretz, and most Jews had non-Jewish sounding names in Chutz La'aretz. Where was Rabbi Yochanan from? He's not from Chutz La'aretz. He was from Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Yochanan was giving his psak for Eretz Yisrael, and the Brice is giving their psak from Ovdei Kochavim. And then the Gemara goes a step further. V'ika da'amri, ki masnisa ba'ami na'yu pasha lemi masnisa. There are others who say that Rabbi Yochanan's whole proof to his shita was actually based on this Brisa. The Brisa was specifically talking about a case where it was from Chutz La'aretz, and Rabbi Yochanan, based on it, made this general principle of how you can apply it to Eretz Yisrael. So that concludes the discussion in the Gemara about Arkos HaTikul Chavim. The next Mishnah is going to be a very, very fundamental Mishnah. I leave it in better hands to Rav Sobolovsky Shlita when he returns to Ezra Shem. Shkai Chavim.
Thank you, Wednesday.
One more shear. One more shear.
Monday.
Monday. Thank you.